Welcome to Focus on the Community, a weekly program that focuses on issues and events in our community.
Hello and happy weekend. Welcome to another Focus on Community. I'm Frank Rush. Nice to have you along. By the way, if you miss any part of today's show or you go, huh, did I hear that right? You can actually just go to our website and it's posted for you right there as a podcast. This weekend, we have Tammy Silverman from the Indiana Youth Institute with us today. Tammy, how you doing?
I am doing well. How are you, Frank?
Not too bad. So how are things at IYI? Anything new and exciting going on up there?
Oh, always, right? So we're talking about summer learning loss, trying to help schools that, you know, kids, make sure kids can, if they need to, regroup after this year. We're also talking about some of the funding that the state legislature allocated for that, CARES funding, you know, all kinds of summer programs, summer jobs, plus all of our data. So, you know, never a dull moment.
I know this isn't really what we were going to talk about today, but you talk about the state legislature and what they gave as far as CARES funding to help kids. And I know that they're doing here locally, some of the school systems are doing summer classes. You know, they always had summer educational opportunities at some point in time. This year, some of them are being done virtually, which basically is completely different from everything else they've ever done in the past. So, well, first of all, I mean, what are you guys seeing? Are there a lot of folks that are doing this virtually as well? How much money did they really give to try to help schools out who are doing these summer classes?
Well, there's a couple different things, and I guess it kind of depends, but House Bill 1008 was just passed, and it's going to allocate quite a bit of funding to schools, but the schools have to apply for these summer camps. So I think Department of Ed, if I'm remembering correctly, just in the past couple of days, put out some of their parameters. They're trying to get this money out the door quickly for the summer, but it's up to the school. So you could propose virtual things, or you could propose in person. And I think we're going to see a mix of that because, right, it just depends on what the school thinks will work best in their community and what they're prepared to deliver really, really quickly.
This is the pessimist in me, which is a pretty large part of me. but when I see that the state legislature adjourned just, I don't know, a week or so ago, and now they're saying, okay, we're going to put some money out there for summer programs. Well, schools are starting to dismiss for summer break here in the next week or two.
Yep.
All right. Well, how do they even have anything? I mean, I'm sure they all have summer programs put together, but it's like, boy, you talk about trying to throw something together at the last minute. I mean, I just don't see how they can, A, make their case, and B, how anybody at the state, on the state level, can even properly evaluate it to determine whether or not they ought to get the money.
Yeah, it's a hustle for sure. Let me tell you, and by that I mean fast, not like a backroom hustle kind of thing. But it's fascinating.
Well,
I will say that a lot of the schools have been paying a lot of attention to this bill as it was in the works, and so they've been thinking about it for a couple of months, right? And it looked good, and it's had huge support since it was proposed. So there was a likelihood. So you already, you know, I think people have been thinking about it. That being said, you're absolutely right. Allocating the dollars, creating some sort of a equitable rubric to evaluate, getting the materials out there, getting them back and getting the dollars out all by summer, when you're talking about educators who have been stretched thin this year anyway, is a tall order. And that being said, we know the kids need it. So I think the schools that we've talked to you and the Department of Ed are trying their best to get it done, but it's not going to be easy for sure.
And I guess my next question would be for anybody involved in education nowadays is how long is it going to take us to get back on pace with everything that we've gone through this year? Maybe nobody wants to admit it, but I think you see a lot of people, myself included, who really sit back and think, these kids got hurt, mentally, because they're not where they should be because they weren't able to keep up. Technology's great, but how long is it going to take for us to make up the ground already lost and get them back on pace?
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation about that right now. I think it'll take a little time to figure that out. We know that, you know, one of the things for this, what to do this summer, that we're hearing a lot of people talk about and encourage is go ahead and partner with those programs in your community that are already doing summer camps. So maybe instead of having to or trying to stand up your own whole summer camp, you can infuse some education, particularly it seems as though math has taken the biggest hit as far as learning loss. Maybe you can infuse some math lessons during the middle of the camp, right, by baking or cooking or doing some movement like physics, you don't want to call them physics example, you know, experiment, but
yeah.
But it, you can do those things embedded in rather than starting from scratch, because one, we do need to address some of the learning loss and some of the connectivity loss. The other thing is kids are stressed out, so they also need summer to have a little fun and reconnect and engage with other kids, and so we don't want them sitting in a classroom or a Zoom classroom for the entirety of the summer, because that's also not going to get them where they need to go going forward.
I was never a very good math student. I was always more of a finger and toes kind of guy. yeah, but it was always kind of fun, you know, when you kind of figure it out. But I figure I was kind of like a lot of kids with the fact that sometimes it took me a little longer every now and then to kind of catch on. And once I caught on, it was all good and all even. But then there's other kids out there that they could just like go, oh, yeah, that's easy, and then move on to the next thing. So, you know, it's going to be hard for some of these kids to get back on pace. But I think they probably will if they're given the right amount of attention and time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just like adults, sometimes if you can apply it to everyday things, it's not just theoretical, right? Like, I'm sure you do quite well on managing your own personal accounts, and you're, like, because that's meaningful for you. You know, how do we make some of these math lessons tangible and meaningful and you know, really practical for kids as well? And I think then it resonates, and it doesn't seem so much like you know, summer classroom as much as it is learning while you're still having fun.
Well, you're right about one thing. I do enjoy my money.
And managing it, right? Like,
that's,
you understand,
right,
that that's important.
That's right. I like to keep other people's fingers out of it as much as possible. And seeing as how now we're at the point where we're filing taxes in May, well, that's a whole nother topic. Oh, well, anyway. Hey, the main reason we had you on today, too, April just wrapped up Child Abuse Awareness Month. And it's something that, okay, that's 1 month. Still, there's 11 others. So really, there shouldn't necessarily be Child Abuse Awareness Month. It ought to be continuous child abuse awareness, because it's something that, even though in some areas is not prevalent, hardly ever heard of, in other areas, it's an everyday occurrence. And it's important that, it's out there, so it's important that we not just sweep it under the rug, that we pay attention to it. And I guess what? Part of what you're trying to do is make sure that people understand what to look for and then what to do about it once you see it.
Absolutely. And you are 100% right that April is that awareness month, but obviously every month we need to be paying attention to it. And, you know, different than in a couple of the other states I've worked in Indiana, our law says that every adult is a mandated reporter. So each April, we think it's beneficial to remind people of that and tell them what that means and what their responsibility is, because it is a little different than in some of our neighboring states.
Well, you know, and there's, look, okay, you're required to report, but, and there's a natural tattletale people out there, but you don't want to be ringing the phone every time, you know, some little thing happens. I mean, most people that I know of, they want to report it when they know that there's something legitimately there, but they want to make sure that they're actually reporting something legitimate. They didn't, like I said, they don't want to be making the phone call when there's really nothing to report. And knowing where that line is, in a lot of cases, is awfully hard, especially for the uninitiated who don't always know what to look for.
Right, right. So let's talk about those folks first, and then we'll talk about, because actually you're right, the folks that aren't trained or you know, don't see kids that often aren't the ones that make most of the reports. So we'll get to that. But our statute and our child abuse and neglect law talks about and defines it as a reasonable suspicion that child abuse or neglect has occurred. And so, again, it's not just, it's really saying what is reasonable. Did somebody say something? Did a kid say something? Do you see some unexplained bruise or numerous bruises in various stages of healing? All of that kind of stuff. Is that reasonable? And if so, you know, you're required to make that call. Now, that doesn't mean that whoever is, you know, that parent or guardian is automatically going to be found, you know, that it's a substantiated case of child abuse or neglect. You know, some kids are clumsy and they fall down, and that'll be investigated. But, you know, for the most part, it's that reasonable suspicion that do you have that gut feeling that something's not right here? Then you're supposed to make that call. That being said, the majority of the calls for abuse and neglect rely on those individuals, specifically educators, that do have that special knowledge, and they're able to see those kids day in, day out.
Yeah, and that means that they really have a comparison point. They know they can see things as they start to slide downhill a little bit. And also, too, for the uninitiated, myself included there, I wouldn't say necessarily child abuse per se, but I mean, look, if kids are going hungry, that can be either abuse, or it unfortunately could just be a financially challenged family that are just having a hard time. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to help them. But correct. There could be two different reasons there, and that can mean a whole different thing.
Well, 100% right, again. So you're betting 1,000 so far today. Because actually, the most common situation is neglect. At over 82% of the cases in our state is that neglect. Now, could that be willful neglect? Sometimes, but most often it's a struggle in that family, right? And most often that's financial. Sometimes it's a result of substance use disorder, those kinds of things. So in that case, then the Department of Children's Services and or local programs can help address some of those basic needs, access to food, shelter, safety, medicine, whatever those things might be. So that's the vast majority of cases. Unfortunately, we know, and I know there have been some horrific ones in your area, there are also cases where children are physically or sexually abused.
And that's it, too. That's the other thing. When people think of abuse, they automatically, at least in my mind anyway, most people tend to think, oh, sexual abuse. Okay, that's the one that maybe does come to mind first. But it's certainly not always the easiest to spot. You really have to know what to look for to understand a child's behavior and those unverbalized signs to look for to know that a child's really suffering.
Absolutely. And that's where those teachers, coaches, youth group leaders, you know, daycare providers, that's where they, in addition to like general, again, that reasonable suspicion, that gut feeling, they have additional training. They understand that a sign of sexual abuse may be a young child understanding and describing sex acts at a level that is way beyond their age. That is a red flag. That is a very specific red flag, but that comes as part of that additional training. So again, fortunately, those cases are relatively small, but man, we do need to take them seriously.
And the other thing too about that is the fact that I'm not saying you should get involved and think this is going to be a lifelong commitment or anything, but if you suspect something and you pick up the phone and you call the cops and you go, hey, this is what I'm saying, go deal with this. That doesn't necessarily mean you're completely off the hook. You're not obligated to anything, but you should probably keep your eyes open just to make sure that the child actually gets the help needed, even if you made the phone call.
Well, and you're right. You can make those reports anonymously, right? So it's okay for you to, again, we're responsible for making the calls. You don't have to do the investigation. In fact, do not do that.
No,
don't
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're not Columbo, so stop it.
Exactly. And that's, Columbo's had a resurgence in the pandemic, but that's a whole other discussion for another day. I love crime dramas, but that's not what we're talking about here, right? That's not for you. Again, you need to make that call. You need to call the Indiana Child Abuse and Neglect Hotline, and then they'll take it from there, right? Somebody else who is trained at doing those investigations steps in and works through the process. So again, you make the call. You pay attention to kids that you come in contact with and make sure that what you see demonstrates that they're safe and healthy. And if not, if you believe there's something else going on there that should be reported, just make the call.
And don't think somebody else will make the call.
No.
That's the most important thing. Just don't go, oh, well, somebody else will call it in. No, you call it in. I mean, why not you?
Why not you? First of all, why not you? Because you want to be that caring, responsible citizen. Two, it's your legal obligation. Three, you know, again, somebody might, if they get one call that says, you know what, something doesn't seem quite right. This kid, you know, usually is pretty go-get-him and now is withdrawn and somebody else calls and says, you know, I saw this bruise and I'm a little concerned about this kid, and somebody else calls, well, then there's more information to really investigate on. So you may think you're the only one out there, but you may be that additional piece of information that those investigators really were waiting for they needed.
And also, too, let's be quite honest, the old saying holds true, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So the more people that call and complain and raise concerns and raise the red flag about a child specifically, if it's you and two or three other people, all of a sudden everybody's like, whoa, there must be really something to this. Hey, let's hurry up and get on this.
Correct.
You know, I hate to say, it's not like I'm saying that these folks aren't doing their job, but I'm just saying if there's more people that call and complain and raise issues, there's more likely a chance that the child will get the help they need a lot quicker.
Well, and think about it. If there's three people making calls, there are three of those caring adults that said, wait a second, something's not right here. And that rightfully carries more weight, right? There's multiple people that have observed something that is of concern.
Indiana Youth Institute's a great organization with a great website at
IYI.org.
So what you got on the website right now anyway? Anything good? I know you do.
Yeah, we're talking about data. We just published a new thing on immunizations, including a COVID vaccine for young kids. But as well as we've seen during the pandemic, as people were staying home, their kids also weren't getting some of those basic vaccines, you know, their normal things that they needed to get. And we want to make sure that all the kids, you know, we don't want some of those other illnesses to resurge.
Yeah.
That have been pretty much wiped out.
Unfortunately, everybody staying at home or being restricted has kind of let some things fall by the wayside, not just in that, but in a lot of things. So, yeah, it's a good idea to kind of keep that. And you guys have plenty of good articles on all kinds of things about kids all
the
time.
We sure do. And I was going to say, we have a college and career conference coming up in early June, and the registration's open. The cool thing, it's virtual this year. We're bound and determined to get it back in person after this year. But right now, it's virtual, and we do have scholarships available for every Indiana youth worker. So if you work with kids, if you're a teacher, after-school provider, whatever, you just go on our website and register, and that's how you claim your scholarship. So it's no money out of pocket for you.
Because everybody loves free money, and it's a chance to get some if you do it right. So,
yeah. All you have to do is register. It's super easy. And so, you know, it's kind of a unique year in that way when we're doing it virtually. And like I said, we had some great supporters that stepped in and said, we want to make sure everybody can attend this year.
Tammy Silverman with the Indiana Youth Institute. It's IYI.org. And if you missed any part of today's program, we have it available for you right now as a podcast. You can go back and listen to it or download it from our website. And we will see you next week.
You've been listening to Focus on the Community, a weekly public affairs program that focuses on issues and events in our community. To be considered as a guest on Focus on the Community, contact us by calling 812-420-2518. Be sure and tune in again next week at this time as we focus on the community.